Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
And welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and we have two people as guests today that I think you're going to find very interesting because they take a whole different perspective relative to generations working together. It's called Generations Inc., their publication. We're going to be talking about baby boomers, linksters, working with people of different ages in the working environment. Megan Johnson and her dad, Larry Johnson, are with me on the line right now. Welcome, both of you, to the Donna Sebo Show.
Hi, Donna. Hi, Donna.
How are you?
Well, just busier than a one-armed paper hanger going up backwards on a ladder. Aren't you glad you asked?
I hate going backwards on a ladder, especially when I only have one arm. It's really tricky.
I know. It's tough. I really enjoyed your publication, and I wanted my audience to know about you because it's not often that fathers and daughters get together as a team, but you have an organization called the Johnson Training Group, and you work with big leaguers like the American Express, Harley Davidson, Nordstrom, Dairy Queen, and so many other people. But you really have come together as a team so that you can not just talk the talk, but also walk the walk of example for other individuals. And I think this is terrific. How did the two of you come to decide that you wanted to join forces to educate the working environment about how the generation mixes can be very useful and can really empower the working marketplace?
Dad, do you want to answer that? Or do you want me to start?
Well, I can start and you pick it up.
All right, you start and I'll tell you if you're right or not.
That's usually the case.
Okay, go for it, but Dad, that's fine.
Well, back in 86, I started the Johnson Training Group. I was working in government and decided to do involved in management development. So I started this group, and Megan went with me on some trips where I would go on the road and teach seminars. And
point out, I was a kid at the time, not like I was an adult.
Right, you were okay. A kid. You were. She was in high school, and she said she watched me work, and she said, "Do you get paid for this?" I said, "Well, yeah." And she said, "Well, this is what I want to do." And I, so she went on to college, and then she worked for some big companies in sales. But she kept kind of coming back to, "Dad, I'd like to work with you." And I says, "Well, what are you interested in that you could share with audiences?" And she says, "Well, I'm interested in this, how Generation X, which is what she was, is perceived. Because as far as I can see, we're getting a bad rap out there in the workplace." And so she started researching it and eventually left her job and joined the firm. You want to take it from there, Megan?
Yeah, well, I joined the firm, but the real reason is because I figured if I worked with my dad, he would be motivated to help me be successful or I'd move back home. So that was my initial plan. But, I started speaking about generations back in 97, and like most young people, it never occurred to me that I wouldn't always be the youngest person. And so as the baby boomers have aged and Generation Y has come into the workforce and now the linksters are coming into the workforce, the generational divide has become wider because there's so many different generations in the workplace right now and in the marketplace.
Oh, that's so true.
It's true. And a couple years ago, actually my mom, who is the smartest out of all three of us, suggested, "Why don't you try writing a book together?" And my father was gracious enough, because he has another book under his belt called Absolute Honesty, a terrific publication, but he graciously agreed to write a book with me, which I think was much harder work for him than for me, because I think I'm definitely the high maintenance of the two.
Okay, I love that kind of honesty. One of the things that this book evolved with me and in my conversations with various people as a counselor, and also because of the holidays, there's a lot of social interaction, obviously, that we experience. And on Christmas Day, I was having a conversation with some people about the fact that your interview was coming up and how, due to circumstances, a lot of the baby boomers have entered back into a workforce. And when you have the Linksters generation trying to move in with the baby boomers, it's almost like World War III in some situations. And some people said, well, gee whiz, you can't have generations working together. It won't cut it, because some people just don't want to change. And I said, well, that can be on either end of the spectrum, but that's not true. And what you have found out and what you present in your book is that we all have certain paradigms of attitudes and thinking. And it's important to become educated so that then we can have better communication between the generations, because the kids today, I'll call them kids because I can reserve that right. As a mature woman, I can do that. But their way of looking at things and their world experience, obviously, is very limited. To work with someone that has seen different environments and be able to actually understand what that older person is saying, it's a tough proposition. It's really, really tough. It's an educational process, isn't it?
It is. It's an educational process on both sides. And we use a term in the book called generational myopia. And what that means is that everybody from different generations comes to the party or the work situation with a different set of expectations of the other person's behavior based upon their own generational signpost. And a generational signpost is an event or phenomena that really shapes and influences a generation. It influences the way you perceive conflict. It drives your motivation when you buy products. And it also bonds us to one another. We share a certain bond with other people that share our generational signposts. Well, because those generational signposts are unique from generation to generation, we have a different set of expectations from the people around us. And even if, it's sort of funny, even if the job is getting done, sometimes it's because the other person isn't doing it the way we would have done it, we still get upset and we waste a lot of precious time and energy being mad about something because maybe that younger person or older person took a different path. They got the end result, but they didn't do it the way we would have done it. And sometimes we have a hard time getting over that hurdle. I know I do.
Oh, I agree. I think that that's very true. That's a very difficult thing for most people to get through. Now, Larry, when you were working with Megan on this, and
yes,
you were putting the book together, when you as a mature man were trying to put together pieces of information, what did you discover in working with the research along with Megan? Because she's younger than you, obviously. And
right,
she is of a particular generation, and you did quite a bit of research on in each generational segment. What was the greatest aha that you experienced when you were doing this?
Well, I realized that as I watched my daughter write, she continually, throughout the book, got better and better and better. That simply writing.
That's very generous of you to say.
You know, by the end of the book, I'm saying, hey, this is really good. Nice job. I don't think I have to do a thing to this.
Yeah, my dad was a wonderful, it was a perfect writing situation because I have to be honest, I didn't excel. I excelled in creative writing, but I didn't excel in things like grammar and punctuation. So my father was a wonderful editor helping fix those glaring errors. So he was very patient in taking care of that stuff.
And what I learned was that Megan has a great deal of patience for her doddering old father. And I really appreciate that. And I guess if nothing else, it sort of exemplified what we think is really the crux of the book, which is that the more you know about the other generation and are willing to adapt to their needs, the more likely it is you're going to get along.
I find, and this came up at this particular social conversation I was having this past holiday weekend, the conversation turned to the fact that communication is one of the weakest links at this time between generations, and that the younger generation is having a challenge because they're so used to abbreviating everything, they are not able, they don't seem to have the patience to want to communicate. They want everything in 30 seconds or less. And of course, reality teaches you, if you live long enough, that life doesn't always run in a straight line, and the 30-second specials are few and far between. So you have to put in some extra effort. When you were doing your research on the baby boomers, your Gen X and your Generation Y, and then your Linkster, which often is called the entitlement generation, when you were getting all of this data, and you look at the working marketplace today, what would you want employers to understand, as well as employees? Because this can really be an agitation when you put a Linkster with someone that has come from a baby boomer generation, or even the Generation X. I mean, it's really a challenge because we all, like you said, have our own particular paradigms of thinking.
Dad, do you want to start with that one?
Sure. Well, it gets down again to seeing, walking a mile in the other person's shoes, or I guess, you know, texting in the other person's PDA, whatever, however you want to think about it. But it's really, the more I understand that somebody younger than me is going to see the world differently, and the more effort I put into trying to reach across that gap, to understand, for example, the fact that a lot of the communication does take place by text and is quick. And on the other hand, being willing to offer what I have to how I see the world in a way that they'll accept it it makes a big difference in bridging the gap. And, of course, if they can do the same for me, then that's all the better. But usually it's hard to expect other people to adapt to you. It usually requires that if anybody's going to make the change, it has to be you, because the other person thinks either everything's okay or there's something wrong with you.
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Oh, I was going to say, well, one reason that, you know, because that is a common objection we get from people in our audience, because both my dad and I speak to, you know, different groups and audiences, is that, you know, audience member will come up to me later and say, well, why do I have to be the one flexing? You know, I have the more seniority, or I have the more experience. Why should I be flexing? And we really want to make clear, we're never saying that you lower your expectations or you dumb it down for mm-hmm. different generations, but you are the one wanting to have a different result. If you're having friction with your multi-generational coworkers, your employees, or even your family members, it behooves you to look at, okay, how can I flex my behavior to get the end result I want? And so we're not saying dumb it down, or we're not saying let people get away with things that they shouldn't get away with. What we're just saying is, can I look at the situation differently, maybe even behave differently in this situation, as long as it's ethical, moral, and legal, but still get the end result I want? And if that's the case, why not? If I can get the end result I want from the people around me, and maybe even get something better, why not flex your behavior or even look at generations a little bit differently? Because very often we hear people say, you know what, the motivation is your paycheck. That's your motivation. Well, no, the paycheck's why you show up. But the motivation is why you excel, and you know what. And if you want people around you to excel and really reach higher, then you're going to have to look at customizing the way you interact and communicate with people.
Yeah, an example we get often, in when we give these talks, is somebody will say, you know, I got this young guy in the office, and at 5 o'clock, man, he is out of there. You know, no matter if there needs to be orders filled or we're supposed to return a call to a customer, he just figures, I'm done, you know. Mm-hmm. And the advice I would offer him is, hey, if that's bothering you, which it obviously is, then it's really up to you to do something about it. Maybe to have a chat with him in a collegial way and explain the bigger picture so that... He understands that, you know, customers are hanging out there waiting for an answer, and if we leave at 5, we may lose the customer. The customer has a higher expectation, and and gently kind of mentoring him. Now, that seems like common sense, but, you know, a lot of times people will just get ticked that the kid doesn't do it and say, okay, they're just, you know, these new kids are just useless. And without making the effort to kind of coach them along.
You bring a point out that in the working marketplace, in today's world, we can have all of these generations, the baby boomers, Generation X, Y, and the links, all of them coming in and some different level. And with people living longer than ever before, people that are in their 60s or 70s are finding they really don't want to stop working because they're enjoying better health, many of them. And we have a real gap that's beginning to come up relative to those baby boomers leaving the marketplace. And if they don't pass along a lot of what they know, we've got a big, big, big gap. What are some of the numbers regarding this? Because this is significant stuff.
Well, Donna, you brought up a great point about baby boomers having this knowledge. I always point out to audiences, I say to audiences, because baby boomers have had so much experience in the workplace, baby boomers know that there's the way you get things done that's written in the book, you know, you follow the manual, and then there's a real way you get things done. And that's all up in their head. And even though baby boomers are going to stay in the workplace probably a little bit longer because of financial reasons or just because, again, they don't want to retire, many baby boomers will begin to make more lifestyle choices. So you may see baby boomers not willing to work as many hours. You may see baby boomers looking to do some, you know, all their life they had this dream and they want to fulfill that dream of being a florist. So you may see baby boomers making a shift in their careers. And really, the people around you, those of us who are working with baby boomers, we really need to think about to ourselves, what if that baby boomer doesn't show up tomorrow? Or what if that baby boomer has a health scare? What if that baby boomer begins to cut back their hours? How long is it going to take me to replace what they know? Just not even in my time, but in money and in energy. That, I mean, what they've got up in their head, how much would I struggle if they didn't come tomorrow? And I know I think about that often with my dad, working with my dad. We'll be working on a big contract, and I'll think to myself, wow, what if I had to do this without him? How much harder would it be?
Mm-hmm. Very true. And you're right about the baby boomer generation. They do keep a lot in their head. They're also very resourceful. Many of them have had to grow through situations where they had to think outside the box. Not all of them, but a lot of them. And so when that can be passed along to the younger generation, even though we've got all this technology, basics, in my mind, too, are still basics. And when you can be supportive of a younger generation and pass that along, I really think it's invariable. Let's go into the Generation X, because you talk about how with those people, and Megan, you're one of them,
One of the proud. There's not many of us, but we are out there.
You're out there. And you say one of the most important things in working with people of your generation, the Generation X, is time flexibility. And this is something that, my goodness, I just think is so important. Yet, lots of times there are in job environments where there may not be a lot of time flexibility. What can an employer deal with this, and how would a Generation Xer work with this themselves when they go in?
Well, and Dad, I'll start on this just because I'm a Gen Xer.
Okay.
But Generation X, one of their big generational signposts was that Generation X was one of the first generations to have in large numbers both parents working. So that when Generation X came home, mom and dad were very often not at home. And so we had this phenomenon called latchkey children. And really, there was this whole attitude, even if you weren't a latchkey child, there was a whole attitude that, you know, Generation X, they were okay to be left on their own, to sort of fend for themselves. And I think that was very beneficial. I think what happened was Generation X grew up to be a very independent generation. But what happened is they come into the workplace, and their attitude is, hey, just tell me what you want done, give me the tools and training to do it, and then leave me alone. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to joke with my audience as baby boomers. Baby boomers are the teamwork generation. They created the whole idea and concept of teamwork in the workplace. I like to say baby boomers like to have meetings to talk about the next meeting. And so you have conflict there because the baby boomer tends to sometimes just want to have teams for the sake of teams, whereas the Gen Xer is like, you know what, I just want to work by myself, leave me alone. And when you're in work situations where there isn't so-called traditional time flexibility, you know, we have to have someone here between 8 and 5, well, you can look for other areas to be more flexible. So, you know, I was speaking to a group, and one of the group members said, you know what, I have a meeting every morning on Monday morning, whether we need to talk about anything or not. She said, after I heard you speak, I realized that having this Monday morning meeting every week was not necessary, because sometimes there was just nothing that needed to be covered, and I was really, it was a physician's group. She said, I was wasting, you know, a lot of my staff time coming into this meeting, that there was no point of having the meeting. And so look for, I mean, there's other areas that you can be flexible, being it the types of meetings you have, types of tasks that your Gen Xers are doing. Are you able just to give them the tools and have them free rein on how they complete the task? There are other areas to be more flexible if you don't have those, you know, if time isn't flexible.
This also applies to rules. If you, and this applies not only to Gen Xers, but Gen Yers as well. But especially Gen Xers, because they're so darn independent, Megan being a good example. You know, every organization has to have rules, but let's face it, you can take a look at all the rules you have, and there are some really stupid ones. Mm-hmm. I think it behooves an employer to be sure that you're not asking people to do things that they may go ahead and do, not say anything, but consider to be stupid, like that, you know, that monthly report. Is that really necessary? Does anybody read it? Is there a better way to do it? Is it a waste of people's time? And make sure that, especially for the Gen Xer, that what they're doing has relevance and makes sense, and it's just not stupid.
Gen Yers, you had a story in here about a young woman, very intelligent, goes into a job. She's not doing things up to par. Comments are made about it. She ends up walking off the job because, I won't take this kind of attitude from anybody. And I'm just going, oh, boy, that goes over really well. I'm glad that that person walked out the door. Thank you very much. Now, this is a generation that you said really had overprotective parents. Everything's done for them. Doesn't mean that they're not intelligent. Holy Joseph, that is something that would give you white hair within 5 minutes after having something like that happen. Someone just walking off the job because they just aren't going to be criticized. Wait a minute here. Whoa.
We call them snowplow parents because they remove any obstacle that may be in their child's way. And, you know, I don't think I want to make the point that, and we make this to audiences, it doesn't mean they're bad parents. It's just many Gen Yers have baby boomers for parents, and the baby boomer parent is a different type of parent than they were to Generation X. Not better, not worse. They're just different. They're older, and their priorities have changed. We did not use the word latchkey kid to describe Generation Y as they grew up. We use words like stay-at-home dad, soccer mom, play dates. This generation has had one, maybe two parents extremely involved in the activities they participate in, the friends they have, the jobs they choose. They've helped them manage their schedules, get them to soccer practice, their volunteer activities. So they've had somebody extremely involved. And they expect that type of involvement in the workplace. Now, here's where people get their feathers all ruffled. They think that this generation has to be babysat. They do not have to be babysat, but they do need a type of involvement. Are you touching base with them? Are you talking to them about what they're working on? Are you making sure they're getting enough feedback about their performance? And so that you are you're in touch with them, not babysitting them, but are you in touch with them and making sure that you both are on the same path.
Let's get into the Linksters, because they are really into technology, and technology changes at such a rate. But the Linksters, again, they've got a verbal shorthand. There's all kinds of things that are coming up, giving them challenges. When it comes to entering into the workplace, many of them have this sense of being entitled that they're owed this, that, or the other. And I've heard this feedback from many people saying, I just feel like I have got a teenager. When I've got someone that's in their middle 20s, I feel like I'm dealing with an adolescent. Help. I mean, they're just screaming. They're just having a fit. A lot of people looking at prospective employees now. Now, they're all, not all that way, but this is a pattern that's come about. They don't have any way of relating to certain issues or environments because this isn't their world. Their world is totally unlike what the previous generations have experienced. So help, what do we do here?
Well, I'm doing all the talking, so I need to let my dad in. But Linksters are really the youngest generation. They're in their teens. They're the ones, when you go into Starbucks, they're the ones making your half-calf decaf soy latte, or you know, you're buying your movie tickets from them when you go to that old-fashioned movie theater. But Linksters, here's what's interesting about Linksters. Different than Generation Y. Generation Y, you know, grew up with technology, but Linksters were using technology was kind of, and all those things like social media were in full swing as Linksters came on board. And so Linksters, when you say, I don't understand how a Linkster thinks, I agree with you because their brain, and research proves this, their brains are wired differently. By using technology at such a young age, their brain fires differently than my brain or your brain.
Mm-hmm.
During the holidays, I was shopping at the mall, and there was a little 3-year-old girl. She was standing in front of one of the directory signs for the shopping mall that showed you where the stores were located. And she was taking her finger, and she was placing it on that sign, and she was dragging her finger across the sign trying to move the images.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, those directory signs don't move. They're just a sign. And when it didn't move, when it didn't respond to her command, she started crying. But I thought, this is a generation, these younger people, think differently than we do. They expect the signs to move. They expect to be able to interact with everything that they work with. Whereas I would never expect the sign to move. I would be shocked if this, I'm still shocked when I use a touch screen. But they actually think differently, and that's going to be the big hurdle as they take over more and more ranks in the workforce. Is their brains are just firing differently than ours.
I think in terms of answering your question, what do you do about that? I think we have to be keenly aware that young people, as they come in, Gen Yers especially Linksters, are going to expect that the world happens quicker for them. And, they look around and they see things like the invention of Facebook and the explosion of Facebook in a very short period of time. And so they're on a faster time schedule than maybe us baby boomers and certainly the traditionals were. I think part of what we have to do, again, getting back to adapting, is saying, are we creating an environment that is adaptive enough for these young people? Because if not, they'll go somewhere else and find something else to do. Or they'll get just burned out and become problem children.
Well, I think in every generation there has been a patterning of that type because of the technological advances. One of the comments that you made in your book that I really, really think is very valid is the use of mentoring between generations. The state of Alaska started a program with its teachers. They were finding so many of their young teachers were just leaving teaching ranks, and these are very intelligent people, and they wanted to keep these good teachers because they really, really need them. And a lot of the older generation is retiring. So they started up a mentoring program for young teachers by mature teachers. And I had a chance to chat with someone. I'm looking forward to having an interview with a woman that's been doing it. Their success level and turnover rate has just dropped immensely. Their success level has just escalated because those that had been teaching that have the wisdom and understanding of variables, regardless of technology, enable that young teacher to see how they can get past certain hurdles. So I really think your book brings out so many excellent points of adaptation, adjustment. You don't throw the baby out with the bathwater when it comes to the older generation because they're rich with a repository of knowledge that's invaluable. And once that's gone, then the younger generation has to start from ground zero and go through pain and suffering that they shouldn't have to go through.
Right.
On the other hand, the older generation needs to be able to look at the strengths of the younger generation and be able to have an empathy and a communication with them. And I think it enriches the older generation because it invigorates them with the energy, the enthusiasm, the imagination, and the productivity that the younger generation can have. This is not going to stop. This has gone on for eons. This is always going on. So we're just talking about a small segment. What's your website where people can find out more about Generations Inc.?
It's geninkbook.com. So that's GENINCBOOK.com. Geninkbook.com.
Well, Megan and Larry, you're a terrific team, and I think that your book is so timely in coming out because we do have some major changes occurring in this country, and I feel like with the combination of all the talents of the different generations, we can just explode with such a positive format. But it does take that communication, and I think your book, Generation Inc., goes a long way towards achieving that. And I want to thank you very much for being my guest today.
Well,
thank you
for having us. It was a pleasure.
This is Donna Sebald. Don't forget, check out the geninkbook.com for more information. And if you are having some problems, you don't need to be an employer. If you're dealing with these very things that we're talking about with the communication between the different generations, hey, get the book. It is really going to open your eyes. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break for a moment. My guests were Megan Johnson and Larry Johnson, father-daughter team. Book is Generations, Inc. We'll be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Rio. I'm the author of the cutting-edge book, Hooked on Raw. I want to give you and your loved ones the gift of optimum health. So when you order my book, Hooked on Raw, which has over 350 delicious, healthy recipes, I'll include my new DVD, What's Not Cooking in Rio's Kitchen, for a half price. Just go to my website, rawfoodinfo.com, and click on Holiday Special. That's rawfoodinfo.com. Click on Holiday Special.
Hi, this is Donna, and welcome back. I hope you had an absolutely awesome weekend. It just goes by so fast, doesn't it? We've got a New Year's coming up, and then we're going to be right into a brand new year. Well, this week we've got a dynamic lineup of programming. Tomorrow we're going to be talking about Ekin, or not talk, we're going to be talking with Ekin Duravey about a wonderful movie called Earth Pilgrim. Now, this movie, not only is the photography in it absolutely gorgeous, but we're going to be talking about the changes that are shifting in thinking and in how we can move forward without fear into the changes that are occurring around the world, socially, economically, physically, spiritually. So Earth Pilgrim is what we're going to be talking about tomorrow. And then on Wednesday, we're going to be talking with John Welshens about One Soul, One Love, One Heart. Oh, it's just such a great book. And then Stephanie Eldringhoff is going to be on with me on Thursday. We're going to be talking about energy healing. Now, this is a subject that you have an interest in. I think you're going to find Stephanie just absolutely amazing. She's got so much good information. And then on New Year's Eve Day, I have a special guest, Michael Cremo. This is the man who has written the publication, The Forbidden Archaeologist. We're going to be talking about historical finds and human history, and it's really great. Michael is a great guest. He's been on with me before. He has a new book, The Forbidden Archaeologist, and I just think you're going to find it absolutely wonderful. So we've got a great, great lineup this week, and I hope you will be able to join me. And if this is vacation time for you, hey, go for it. That's great. Oh, don't forget, too, if you have a story about the paranormal, something that had a very deep influence on your life, won't you send it to me via email? Send it to Donna at DelphiInternational.com. And be sure to put in the subject line, story for Donna's book, or the equivalent. And that way I will know that is what that is for. And my file folder is getting thicker and thicker with stories, ghost stories, stories about out-of-body experiences. All of these wonderful stories are coming together, and I'm so thrilled because each and every one has something significant to share. So I'd love to have yours, and I just put it down. Be sure you put your contact information, and then just zip off the story to me. Okay, do you have a lot of leftover wrapping paper? Well, somebody sent me some tips on how to deal with this. Now, I've gotten so that I don't use a lot of wrapping paper unless I want to create a certain effect. I've got wrapping paper that I've had forever. I like to use the wonderful bags. I just absolutely love to put presents in bags and use tissue paper or gold folded plate paper or something like that. That's just my preference. It's easy. But a lot of people love using the papers, and you've got so much of it. Well, most of it's going to go into the recycle bin. But some tips were passed along, and I said, these are really nice little tips, and I'll just share them with you. So, you know, sort of out in left field, but why not? You know, you can use your scraps of leftover paper if you have fragile ornaments. When the time comes that you've got to pack all of it up, which is not that far away, you're going to be able to use that. You can use that paper for packing around items that need to be stored. And it makes for a very colorful environment. Also, someone had a suggestion about lining drawers or cabinet shelves with wrapping paper that you really like. And you can just, you know, use double stick tape on the back of the paper, and it'll work out, you know, just fine. And then when you're tired of it, you just pull it out. But it's colorful. Also, you can save some of these wrapping papers, put them on plain white note paper, and you've got homemade greeting cards ready for next year. If you have a project, that would be a great project for the kids. Have it on a, you know, wintry day where nobody can get out. For those of you that are listening from the East Coast, my goodness, you've had the blizzard conditions back there. So if you want something for the kids to do, use some of the Christmas wrapping paper and have them make Christmas cards maybe for the next year. Also, you can shred it, which a lot of people will do, but you can use it as packing material. I know my husband at his manufacturing company, all the paper that they shredded, they so many times they had to ship stuff out, nothing went to waste. So they would just take all of their shredded paper and use it for packing material, and you can do that too. Or you can use it as packing material for gift bags. You know, it's colorful. And the last person that, or the last item that I got, was you can roll small pieces of wrapping paper and slide them inside cardboard tubes, and all your wrapping paper will be in one handy place for next year. So that's just taking care of whatever might be left over. But if you're like me, usually most of it ends up going in the trash recycle bin. Out it goes. Just don't want to leave it around. Now, there are some things that I've got that I'd like to share with you. I don't know about you, but if you've been cooking and cooking and cooking like I've done, when it comes time to feeding the family or putting something together, you want it sweet, simple, and easy. And I came across a recipe that Sandra Lee had put out, and I thought, you know what? This really would fit very nicely for anybody, especially if you have family. You're sort of getting worn out because of all the holiday activities, and here we've got New Year's coming up shortly. It's a cowboy meatloaf and potato casserole. So it's just something that's what you call a winter food. It's kind of dish that's really nice and easy, and I'll share that with you in just a moment. But I also had some other information that I wanted to pass along to you regarding identity theft and some other things. But we're going to take a break for just a moment. When we come back, I'll have some of that good stuff to share with you. And I hope wherever you are, you're just relaxed and cozy and just really enjoying yourself. I'm glad to have you with me after this busy holiday period, this busy holiday weekend. Donna Sebo here. We're going to be taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Hi, this is Rio, host of the Hooked on Raw radio show on rawenergyradio.com. If you're interested in the raw and living food lifestyle, along with the real story of what's happening to our health freedoms, and you don't mind a little controversy, listen to my radio show and podcasts on rawenergyradio.com.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Enter the magical world of God's Kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley, framed by high mountains rich in the brown-red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, he's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com. That 800 number again, 872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. You know, I forgot to give out the phone number. The phone lines are open today, 888-815-9756. Give me a buzz, and we can chat. I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, and let's see what's coming up for you for the new year. Okay, do you have that pad of paper and pen? Again, 888-815-9756. This, if you like cozy, delicious foods, easy to fix. Again, I have just about had it with the cooking because I've been cooking every single day for I don't know how long, and the holidays are so intense, so you want something sweet, easy, and simple. This is what you're going to need. 1.5 pounds of lean ground beef, 1.5 pounds of lean ground beef. You also could use pork, or you could have a mixture of the beef and the pork. That's right. You can do these things. It's all right. You're going to need 3/4 cup of frozen chopped onions. You can thaw them out, obviously, or I just use fresh, just easy. You're going to need 1/3 cup of seasoned breadcrumbs, 1/3 cup of seasoned breadcrumbs, 1 egg. You want to have that in a small bowl, and you want to beat that up a little bit. 1/4 cup of your favorite barbecue sauce. You're going to need 1 packet of taco seasoning. Again, your favorite, whatever you like. 1/2 teaspoon of salt. 1/2 teaspoon of salt. 1 bag of frozen cut russet potatoes. 2/3 cup of evaporated milk. 1 tablespoon of butter. 1/2 cup of real crumbled bacon. 1/2 cup of French fried onions, a little salt and pepper, and then you want to have 1 cup of shredded Mexican four cheese blend, the spicy cheese. Now, when it comes to the potatoes, if you've got leftover mashed potatoes, you don't need any of this stuff. Just take them out of the refrigerator because this is what you're going to use. And you want to preheat your oven to 375 degrees. Now, in a big bowl, you want to combine your ground meat, your lean ground meat, your onions, your breadcrumbs, your egg, and your barbecue sauce, your taco seasoning, and 1/2 teaspoon of salt. Now, you want to mix it thoroughly, and you don't want to knead it like you do bread. You just want to mix it so that everything is together, and then put it into a 9-inch square baking pan. Well, this is interesting. Not a loaf pan, but a baking pan, a square pan. And you want to bake it for 20 to 25 minutes until it's cooked through. And then you want to pour off the drippings. And after that, you know, if you have your own mashed potatoes left over from the holiday dinner, then great, use that. Or you can microwave the frozen cut russet potatoes according to the package directions. And then, in a medium bowl, you mash your cooked potatoes with your milk and your butter. I like using an electric mixer, a portable mixer. Just zips that stuff together really nicely. And then stir in your bacon, your fried onions, season to taste, and spread it over your meatloaf to the edges of the pan. Sprinkle it with your spicy cheese, and then return it to the oven that's still at 375. You can return it to the oven for 15 minutes, and it's going to turn out just wonderfully. And if you really want it to get nice and brown on the top with cheese, I'll tell you, I always add extra cheese. But put the broiler on, and then you'll get it that's wonderful, golden, crusty look to your spicy cheese. It's just absolutely wonderful. The kids will like this. You'll like it. It's simple. It's easy. And even if you had leftovers, it's great heated up. It's just going to be really, really delicious. And this recipe can be adapted, you know, in any way that you want. It's just absolutely wonderful. It's got a basic layout to it. Sandra is so good at doing that. And I just thought I would share that with you because I know that making it easy is something we really, really want to do. So many times when we go into the grocery store, we take so much for granted. I have had conversations with people about the very fact that I think kids often need to be made aware, as well as adults, of the infrastructure that it takes to have what we have in our grocery stores. And I have to chuckle because so often we will go through grocery stores and say, oh, shoot, they don't have this, they don't have that. My goodness, what's the matter with these people? Why don't they keep up with everything? Without realizing there is a tremendous infrastructure and a global activity that goes on to bring a lot of the things in to the grocery store. So I came across some information, some questions, and I thought these are good questions just to share some of these answers with you about. But the next time you go into the grocery store, ask yourself, I wonder how this got here. When you go into your sections, like with Mexican food or Asian food or Middle Eastern food, where did this come from? Is it made in the United States? Has it come from outside the United States? It really is an amazing thing. We get food from all over the world, and because of the transportation system that we have, plane, train, car, you know, whatever, boat, we're able to get these foods. And again, the infrastructure is phenomenal. I can remember being up in Alaska many years ago where the stores were literally stripped bare during the dead of winter because they couldn't get the food in, either by boat or by plane, because the weather was so bad. When you get like 50, 60 below zero, you have some real challenges. The trucks couldn't get in because the trucks couldn't run. It's 70 below zero, this one particular trip when I was up in the far north. And so you look at these things and you say, you can't take it for granted. You just cannot assume that it's always going to be there. But we've gotten to that point where we do. Now, a little bit of a trivia question here. Alcoholic beverages date back to the Stone Age, but distilled alcohol, well, it's more recent. Do you know who made the cocktail possible? Just think about that. Who's done it? Well, Turkey and Armenia in 6000 BC and the Sumerians and Egyptians were brewing beer, you know, a long, long, long time ago. But in 18th century, chemist in Iraq is credited with inventing the process of distillation, which is heating fermented liquids from which pure alcohol is siphoned off, hence the cocktail. And it's been very quickly picked up by cultures throughout the world. However, they still haven't figured out how to cure the hangover. They haven't gotten to that one yet. Now, do you know which country harvested the very first carrot? Do you have a clue? It was the Afghans. That's right. Now, I didn't know this. They were eating purple carrots over 5,000 years ago. They were purple, not orange. Now, carrots, since then, they've been cultivated in all kinds of colors and sizes. And there's an Asian variety of carrot that is 3 feet long. And I didn't know this. This is amazing when you find out these things. Our modern carrot, the orange ones that we're so familiar with, was developed by the Dutch in the 17th century, and it's been the most popular ever developed. Again, we take a lot of things for granted, just assuming that it's always there. And this one that I really thought was interesting, what country did the parental pet peeve process sugar initially stimulate taste buds? I know we badmouth sugar all the time, but it again has been around for a long time. Well, India is the country that we are aware of that first cultivated crystallized sugar, and this was done thousands of years ago. Now, the sugar cane plant originated in New Guinea. And for those of us that are familiar with sugar cane, at one time it was just chewed. It's very, very sweet. And, of course, those people didn't have any dental problems because it didn't cause any problems. It was a natural food product. And it reached Persia. Sugar cane reached Persia about 500 B.C. But Europe didn't have a clue about this until the Arabs brought it to Spain 1,200 years later. Amazing how things are passed along. Now, even after the Arabs introduced sugar in Europe, it was so expensive, the ordinary individual couldn't even dream of affording it. When the prices finally fell and the appetite for the sweet stuff grew, it hit mainstream. By the 18th century, it had become a staple in the West, and, well, we know the rest of the story, don't we? It's in so many products and so many different things. Well, this is Donna Sebo, and I know that we're just about out of time. I'm so glad you're able to join me today. And again, I just hope that wherever you are, you're absolutely thoroughly enjoying your holiday time and having a chance to recoup after a busy holiday weekend. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking with Ekin Duravi about the Earth Pilgrim. If you like knowing about different cultures, if you want an understanding about how to look forward instead of backwards into our changes that are evolving globally, it's affecting all of us, you are going to find Earth Pilgrim a wonderful movie, and Ekin is just an absolutely marvelous person. I'm really looking forward to having him as a guest. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Don't let anybody tell you that the world cannot be a better place and that we cannot make a difference. We can. We can start right where we are. A new year is looming in just a few days, and this is the time for thinking about what we want to make work in this year and what our plan and agenda is going to be. It's okay to sort of fly by the seat of your pants, but many times having your goals and your objectives in front of you where you can really see them and visualize them and feel them really will give you a lot more power as an individual. This is Donna Sebo. I look forward to having you along for the ride tomorrow. We've got a great guest, and for the rest of this week, have a magnificent time wherever you are. We'll be talking here, same time, same place, right here on bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.